You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sean Schaffner, an artist who's Brooklyn-based, although he's talking to me now while on tour. Sean, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you, Brainerd. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Sean, let's begin with why you're on tour, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the acronym POOP, your POOP project, and how it began and what this tour is about.
Yeah, sure. Well, that was like a lot of questions bundled into one, so I'll do my best. The People's Own Organic Power Project, or the POOP project, is something I started in 2010. And as you said, I'm an artist, primarily a theater-based artist. I also do, I'm a composer and a singer and a movement artist, and as well, I do installations and community-based projects. But in answer to your question of how it started, in 2008, I was on tour with a Nickelodeon show called The Backyardigans, and we had just gotten out of town to try the show in York, Pennsylvania, and we were in the dressing room, a bunch of guys and girls and me, and I realized I had to poop. And so, you know, the bathroom was like basically in the dressing room, was just, you know, on the other side of a door. And I had grown up as a really shameful shitter, as Dave Prager calls it in poop culture. I would hold my poop in. I didn't feel comfortable going, you know, in most places. And I had gotten over this and really overcome this and realized
that. Well, let me just ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
You know, like hesitating to poop in most places, not your home, though.
No, I mean, I'm happy to go into more detail, but I think, you know, most of us, if anyone listening right now thinks, like, about their house, if they have more than one bathroom, they probably prefer one over the other slightly. Or if they think about different places where they go, maybe it's your work, you know, you would like, you want to get that single stall on the second floor. But if the single stall second floor is not open, then you might try the fourth floor because they've got this one, you know, but you definitely want to avoid the fifth floor because of whatever reason. So I think many of us have this hierarchy, you know, Starbucks versus a gas station even is like a simple way to put that. But for me, I really only felt safe pooping at home when I was a kid. And specifically, well, yeah, in home. I was going to say there was one bathroom I preferred more than others, but under duress, I'd use any. But most of the time, I wouldn't poop outside of the home. And so this is a process. Sometimes it's called withholding or, you know, and the poop is obviously supposed to get out of your body. And once it's been in your colon for a little bit, you know, it's like Mother Nature is knocking. And when you're like, there's no one home, you know, she'll knock a little bit more. But then eventually she's like, all right, like, I'm leaving then. And then, you know, I would get home and I would be ready to answer the call, but the other line seemed to be empty. So withholding means that you basically constipate yourself. The longer the poop stays in the colon, the water gets drawn out. It then, you know, if you continue eating, as we often do, it might join up with other little poops that are in the system, which in my case would often lead, after a few days of this back and forth, to like a giant turd that would clog the toilet. My parents would be like, oh, we have to plunge the toilet again. Like, why is this always happening? And I felt really embarrassed and ashamed. And because of that, I held it in more, you know, because I thought the way to prevent having these giant poops was to stop pooping. Obviously, eventually I figured out that actually I could stop having these poops by pooping all the time. So once this had become a habit and I felt sort of normalized, flash forward college, flash forward 2008, I graduated in 2004. So just to give some context to that, I'm on tour and realize that like I'm going to be on tour with these people for a long time and I am not going to go back to my childhood. I'm not going to feel like I have to hold it in. If I have to poop, I'm going to poop. And so I just told everybody that that was the case. I said, you know, I have to poop now. I'm going to go into that room, and you might hear sound or might smell when I'm done. But, like, I don't want to hear any guff about it because we're going to share small spaces like this one for a long time, and everybody needs to feel comfortable taking care of themselves. And at first, you know, they're sort of giving me a look.
What year is this we're talking about? This is when you were on tour with a
yeah, it's 2008.
Nickelodeon. Okay.
So I guess
go ahead.
I was born in 83, so I don't know, you do the math. I was 25, I guess. And
right.
And they're sort of like, yeah, actually, thank you. That's, I really appreciate that. That's helpful, Sean. Thanks for making that safe space. And it was in that moment I sort of realized poop is power, in a literal way and in a metaphoric way, where like we often hide this stuff and pretend it doesn't exist. But when we can own it, which often requires vulnerability and honesty, we can say, look, like, here's my shit. It's not pretty. It doesn't smell good. But it's real. Then we can address it, you know. And when we just sort of make it pretend like it doesn't happen, or we try to make it disappear, that's where the real problems come from, you know. But the lesson that shit teaches us is it doesn't stay shit. It transforms. It becomes the food that we eat, and potentially even the energy that powers our homes and our cities, given modern technology. And yet our tendency is to sort of flush and forget and pretend it, you know, it doesn't happen. So once I had this experience of seeing that poop was power, I started to do the research. I read Dave Prager's Poop Culture, Dominique Laporte's The History of Shit, or a whole bunch more, Rose George's The Big Necessity, and came to see that behind this taboo of pretending this thing doesn't exist were all of these issues. You know, poop is, it's the place where the private body meets the public body. Like, when it's inside me, no one cares. But once it comes out, everybody has opinions about what to do with it, and it's everyone's problem, in a sense. It's also everyone's problem from a health perspective, that fecal bacteria, if it winds its way back into other people's bodies via food, water, unwashed hands, then it can make people very sick. And that 40% of the world then, as is true today, almost a decade later, still don't have access to safe sanitation. So we hear a lot about clean water, but not why the water is dirty from the poop, because of lack of access to safe toilets. Or we hear about malnutrition, but not about the constant diarrhea, the chronic diarrhea that causes wasting, where people's intestines develop without the ability to absorb nutrients. So these are real issues that affect people every day all around the world. And if we're too embarrassed to talk about it, we can't fix it. The other big issue is around the environment, and thinking of ourselves as and our cities as like resources in and waste back out, which is not the way nature works. That really it's like resources in and resources back out. One person's poop is another person's food, or another creature's food. So I really believe that dispelling the taboo, normalizing poop, means that A, like the kind of thing that I went through as a kid would never have to happen to somebody else. And we know that this happens a lot. The 50% of kids in schools aren't using toilets. Johns Hopkins now has a chronic constipation clinic for children, because there are some estimates that about 10% of kids will go through this at some point.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like really a thing. You know, we're flushing our nitrogen and phosphorus from we're putting it into our clean drinking water, and then using a lot of energy and chemicals to try to get it back out. But a lot of those nutrients go into the waterways. They fertilize algae, which sucks up all the oxygen and kills the fish, you know, not to mention the pharmaceuticals that are coming out in our pee and are also getting into our ecosystem. So we need a better way to deal with it. And the Tao of poo, which is really what I'm teaching on my tour, is this alchemy of transforming shit into a resource. Excuse me.
So tell me a little bit about how that's structured, the Tao of Poop, because of course there's, I like that phrase, because there's also a book called The Tao of Poo, which is meant differently, of course, but
So tell me how
this tour was structured and what happens on this tour. I mean, I also want to ask how the audience is reacting, but first in terms of where you are right now, you're in Charleston, is that where you said you are?
I just got here.
And so what will happen in Charleston? Because your tour has just started.
Yeah. Well, I've been on tour since the beginning of October, actually. And it started because, more broadly as a project, you know, once I realized I was interested in this stuff, I created the Poop Project because I wanted an umbrella that I could file all of these different pieces I was doing about poop under. And in the last 8 years, I've, you know, created two shows. One was a hit in the, it wasn't a hit, it was a critically acclaimed success in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2012. called Eat Shit, How Our Waste Can Save the World. And then one that really was a sold-out success in the New York Fringe in 2015 on a Time Out New York Critics pick called An Inconvenient Poop. We have a podcast done for 3 years called Shit and Shame with Sean, or the Poopcast on iTunes and other podcast places. There's a documentary called Flush about what happens when we flush our toilets, and a children's musical called Innie Outie. But I felt like after 8 years in New York, I just wasn't sure it was working, you know, and that the work was being received. I had some opportunities to go out and do a film screening in Oakland, and then another one in Raleigh, North Carolina. And both of them were really well attended by people I didn't know. And people were coming and saying, like, we want this work and we're interested in it. And that seemed to be telling me that maybe New York had run its course. And that personally, I've been in New York for 17 years. Since I went to school there and was feeling like it was time for a change. So tour has been a way to plant seeds and, you know, fertilize networks throughout the country and see where I really can be of more service. My first day of college at NYU was basically 9/11. And so I was in musical theater school at the time, you know, and it was like, I'm tap dancing and there are people who are running into burning buildings. So that really reoriented me towards feeling that artists have a role to play in society and should serve in a way that perhaps is deeper than mere entertainment. So I have that desire, and I felt like I'm right now on tour trying to figure out where I can be of better service, and performing this new show that's done primarily out of living rooms. It's an intimate show called Assume the Throne. And I'm inviting people to come into their power and to their dignity, that we tend to think, like, you know, between these two extremes of shit, where like everything is awful and we want to get away from it. And, you know, everything else is better than wherever we are right now or whoever we are right now. Or we're running towards the shit. We want everything to be awesome and exciting.
And
we want to feel like...
And let me ask you this just about the venue. So
yeah.
You say it's a living room. You're not doing this in a theater. Are you doing it in a very intimate setting, like someone?
Yeah.
Or is it actually a living room? Or are you just saying that?
Yeah, no, I'm not just saying that. I'm actually doing it in the living room. That's a great question, Brandon. Interestingly, it's become sort of an emergent tour. I'm going to be super transparent about this, that... my hope, I know a lot of people all over the country, and part of that, I think, is having gone to NYU, having been based in New York, people leave all the time and they go other places. So, and I was very inspired by a musician named Gideon Irving, and I had seen Gideon do a house show in 2012. He's a singer and he plays lots of instruments, and he had just come back from New Zealand, and he'd gone there with his instruments and a bike, and he did a house show, and then everything suggested donation, and then he'd put up a map and say, you know, where should I go next? If you know someone who would host me, put their, draw a dot on the map where they live, and then give me their contact info, and I will reach out. And in this method, he toured for like 2 months around New Zealand. He's since done it in Japan, Australia. He's done it by car.
That's so cool. I love that you mentioned that. So with that method, which I imagine you're doing a version of as well, he also toured people's living rooms, essentially.
Yes, he did. And he really inspired me, both because of what I love about the methodology, and specifically for my show right now, is that there's a humility, and there is a simpleness and a generosity. It's really reliant on other people's generosity, that other people are willing to host you. Other people are willing to pay, because everything is, you're not setting a price for things. And I understand from, you know, chatting with him as an advisor before I went on this, that he's really been able to make a lucrative deal. And for me, you know, again, it's like, are we shit? Are we the shit? I want to help people find balance, that actually we don't need to run anywhere. We don't need to run away, and we don't need to run towards. All we need to do is land right here, right now, in our seat of dignity, in not feeling like we're the shit or shit, that we just are, and that maybe everything is shit and everything is the shit. You know, it's all sort of a balance of these two things. Mm. You know, I've been studying Buddhism for a while, and this language might be, we're perfect and we need work. or in the Jewish lineage that I come from as well, we would call this, like, in the left hand you hold I am but dust and ashes, and in the right hand you hold the universe was created for me. But I think there's something really powerful to delivering this message to people, telling people you're enough exactly as you are, and whatever you have enough. When I'm living out of my car and out of the generosity of other people's spare rooms and couches, it's different to hear that, you know, from someone in those conditions. So that's been the idea. And I made a map that had all the people I know around the country, going to use them as anchors. And then, you know, once I knew I'm going someplace, sort of get the rest. So the tour came up quickly upon me, and it turned out that October I wound up with, like, university gigs for which I wasn't doing Assume the Throne. I was doing more of my a stand-up comedy version of my one-man show, An Inconvenient Poop, that I call How the Potty Trained Us. It's all about how why we feel the way we do about poo and how it got to be that way and how it's been different in other places, and how we can really move forward the revolution of changing the way we deal with our bodily functions.
And so in your current show, and go back to what you're about to say, because I'm interrupting you, but in your current show, can you walk us through a little bit, not do the show, but what you're going to impart to the audience in someone's living room tomorrow?
Yeah, for sure. Well, so just to say that I wound up doing the other show in universities. That was a lot of October and early November, but I've had opportunities to workshop the house show, and I've just set up the rest of my tour schedule through mid-February. So hopefully, it's been what I think of as an emergent tour, because it's all happened for the moment, and that's been amazing. It's led to, you know, I thought I would be doing Assume the Throne, and instead I've done selections from Inny Audi in my friend's nursery schools that they've brought me to, or speaking in college classes and community centers. But Assume the Throne, as I said a little bit, is like teaching the Tao of poo, which essentially is fuck that shit, which is to say, like, the shit over here where we think everything's awful, fuck it. It doesn't matter. And, like, maybe it is. Who cares? And on the other hand, wanting to go towards the shit, like, fuck that also, right? Like, maybe we are the shit. Maybe it doesn't matter. And when I say fuck that shit, it's, you know, both just, like, a funny way to put this, but it's essentially, like, when I say fuck it, I sort of mean, like, make love to it. Like, get close to it. Something is awful that's happening to you right now, and you feel like shit, okay, cool. Like, be in that. Be really there. It's gonna pass soon, right? That's part of what the Tao of Poo is teaching us, is, like, everything passes through, and it transforms. It becomes something else. So I introduced the Tao of Poo. I introduced what I call the Four Noble Poops. All of this is in some ways a reformulation of Buddhism, which, rather than fuck that shit, would basically say form is emptiness and emptiness is form. Like, whatever it is, it's not really there. and the Four Noble Truths, which are that suffering is a thing, right? Like, in our lives, discomfort arises, and that suffering has a cause, right? It happens for a reason. And then the suffering can be transformed, can be released, and that there's a pathway to figuring out how to do that. So the Four Noble Poops translates that information to say that shit happens for a reason. We have to look up the pike if we want to find out why the shit is there. The shit can transform. It doesn't stay shit. It becomes other things. And the pathway of transformation is acceptance, right? Like, in a biological way, the earth accepts it. And then it breaks it down, it deconstructs it into its nutrients, and then it reintegrates it in new forms. It becomes flowers, it becomes food, etc. So I really consider the Four Noble Poops, as are the Four Noble Truths, a methodology that might start through the natural biology of the way poop operates in the ecosystem, but then goes again to all of the shit in our lives, right? Like, I'm having resentment. Well, shit happens. Shit happens for a reason. Okay, so why am I feeling resentful? Like, I have to think about my relationship with my person or my relationship with myself, and then to know that the shit can be transformed, that my resentment, it doesn't have to stay this way. I can fix it, and the way to fix it is through accepting that it is, I feel resentful, breaking it down. Why do I feel resentful? And what are its components, and then reintegrating it, right? Bringing it maybe to my partner and just saying, like, I'm feeling this thing. Let's talk about why it's happening, and then we can both come at this with better understanding and make and get ourselves closer together rather than the shit pushing us further apart. But I also see this as a way to view society then too, right? Like we have the Me Too movement, climate change. This is all shit that's happening. And we have too long lived in a society of fecal denial where we pretend that this shit isn't happening, right? But I think we're seeing in these role models, this is the time to call it out. And when that person is doing something they shouldn't be doing, you know, quid pro quo, we say like, hey, look, there's shit happening right there. And then we don't, you know, we don't just pour Metamucil on it. We don't just fire Harvey Weinstein. We have to look up the pike and say, why is this shit happening? And to have faith that it can transform and then to transform the situation. So that's the basic wisdom that I'm delivering to people through the Four Noble, through the Assume the Throne. Like,
and how are they receiving it? What's happening with the audience? Like, you can't say what will happen tomorrow, but to tell me a little bit about what happened yesterday or last week. How does the audience typically receive this if there is such a response?
A typical response, yeah. You know, they're self-selected, so I would say that. People don't come thinking it's going to be about something else. You know, they definitely know that they're going to this thing from the Poop Project, and it's called Assume the Throne, which is a hopefully obvious pun about the toilet. So I think people know. And I would say overall, it's been gorgeous. Like, I've known this for years since I started doing this, that we have no social space with which to talk about shit, and yet we all do it. So people have stories, and they have questions, and they have things they want to know. And what I love about this show is, you know, I specifically wanted to make something to do in living rooms because it's intimate, because it's chatty, in a way that when you're in a theater, you can't get the audience really talking to one another. But when there's 15, 20 people in a living room, like, they're all talking. And it's been great.
Still, it's not an easy conversation. I mean, they, like you say, they know what they're getting into, but it's not a conversation that we're used to having. It's like sitting with a group of people and talking about, like, how we all have sex or something. It's not an easy conversation. We don't typically have language for that. So
even though
people know what they're getting into and what it's you know, in some ways about, that conversation, I would think, also is not one that they've had before and has to be,
it has to be, like, coaxed out of them a little bit. But I think that's the skillfulness I've learned to apply for the past 8 years. And I think it has, you know, it's about me as well. Like, there's no one else in the world who offers quite my package of knowledge about the subject area, charisma, and, like, open-hearted friendliness, and the biography I come with, which is, like, which means that I just have a real vested interest, and I understand the consequences of not talking about these issues. So I've learned to put people at ease, and part of what I say in the beginning of the show is, like, we think we don't like poop, but we all, like, not all, but many of us really like bread, you know, and the bubbles in bread are caused by the farting of the yeast in the bread. And we all like, or many of us like, alcohol. And alcohol is basically yeast, piss, and shit, you know, like, and we all like fruits and nuts and other things that come from plants, and plants store their waste materials in the things we eat. We're breathing the waste product of trees, you know? So I think that starts to put people at ease, and I think also if you think about the people with whom you do talk about sex, they once the conversation begins, often it becomes really exciting. Like, oh, we're finally talking about this, and I've never had anyone to compare notes with before, so, like, now let's really get into it. And I think the same thing happens with shit. Once we start to talk about it, people are really excited that the lid is off and that it's okay to talk about, and so they have things to share, whether that's a story of a time they crapped their pants or a question, you know, like, why do I get constipated? Or, you know, oh, like, my normal is normal? I thought I was weird. And I think, like sex as well, the people we have those conversations with are people with whom we're often very intimate. So once you can get people talking about poop, they feel like they feel really close. You know, they feel almost like family. And in many instances, because it's a living room show, they are family to begin with.
And that's
part of what I love about this model. I'm not going into a town I don't know. You know, I'm not showing up in Charleston, renting a theater, and then putting out a budget to market a play. Instead, I'm like calling my friends and saying, do you know 10, 15 people you'd like to invite over for an interesting evening? I think so far.
That's great. I love that. Yeah. It sounds really positive and wonderful and also, you know, somehow community building too. So before we go, I want to ask you the last question, but let me just say, you know, for the rest of this tour, there will be links in here. I mean, in more about you in the text of the interview that people can learn. Is there any way people can come to these performances, or they really have to be invited if it comes to their town?
That's a great question. Thank you. If you go to thepoopproject.org, there's a nice picture of me sitting on a throne made of toilet paper, and you click that image, and the whole tour schedule will be there. If I'm coming to a place where you live and you want to come to a show or you want to host a show, just send me an email, Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at thepoopproject.org. And generally, if people have space, then, you know, new friends are welcome to come, and I'm always looking for people who are interested in hosting the show, either in their own living room, in a friend's living room, but I also think it could work pretty well in intimate cabaret spaces, you know.
Let me ask you this one other question about it. So then how is it funded for you? Because are the people that are hosting you helping you fund it, or how does the funding happening for this tour?
Yeah, you and my parents want to know, huh? the truth is, I see this as an investment that will bear returns in community building, in networking, and so some of it is from my savings. Some of it is offset by the college gigs. You know, if I can book a college gig, they'll pay me hundreds or thousands of dollars for one class or for a short residency. So that can offset a lot of the other costs. And then suggest a donation. And people, again, have been very generous. You know, I was just in D.C. last week, and a contact of mine called together a group of the young defecators. These are all people in D.C. who do work related to global sanitation and global toilets. And before I knew it, you know, there's 20 people, and I just did a little snippet at a bar, and then he gets up, and he passes the hat. He, like, made a pitch, and I left there with $140 in my pocket. Some of that from selling T-shirts and elephant dung, greeting cards. You know, I do have merch to help offset those costs, but that was a real clear sign to me, and that's a very consistent thing, is that people are asked to give, and they're moved to give. So I wouldn't say that it's, like, fully breaking even, but I think it's going to in the long run.
Sean, it's exciting to talk to you about this. And,
thank you. You
really
too.
Interesting. Let me ask you what you're reading right now. I'm always curious what everyone's reading, and certainly curious what you're reading.
Yeah. I do have an entire suitcase full of books about poop with me, but I'm actually listening on audiobook, which I'm going to count as reading Yuval Noah Harari's Sapiens right now, which has been recommended to me over the past 2 years, and finally was like, it just happened so many times that I've been reading it. And I highly recommend it. Really fascinating way to contextualize our species in the broader genus of Homo, and to really think about the ways that we interact as a species and have evolved socially as opposed to biologically. Really good stuff in there.
Sean, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brainerd. The pleasure is all mine.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.